Hello everyone and welcome to the Real Happy Hour podcast live. We just streamed this amazing movie called Faces by Joseph Adesanya, and we've got quite the amazing panelists that will be joining us today, and I'm very happy that they've taken some of their time out, you know, to just talk more about the film. So obviously, once we have the conversation with the panel, there's a Q&A section and you can ask all the questions, and I'm going to start introducing them. So the first person I'm going to call is the director, Mr. Joseph Adesanya. Yes. Hi, Joseph. Yeah. Next person I'm going to call is Kashif Booth. Kashif is a writer, a producer, and an amazing podcaster. Next person I'm going to call is Adam. Please come onto the stage. Thank you. And last but definitely not least is Suzette. Yes, you can.
Oh, okay.
It's okay. Thank you all so much for being here. How are you guys? Let's start from there. How are you?
Good.
Oh, fine. Yes. Yeah, glad to be here. I thought you were asking the audience.
No, you guys. How are you? And Joseph, how are you?
I'm well.
You not have a mic? Okay. Great. So usually the very first question I ask is, what do you think about the movie? But you guys are actually involved in the movie, because usually it's, we just get a panelist of like directors, actors. But you guys, apart from you, obviously, Kashif. So I'm going to start with Joseph. So what was the inspiration behind the film, first of all, and the motivation for creating this movie? Because you're the writer and director.
Well, I was a co-writer with Damien, and the motivation was that NAS Project, which is a great sexual health charity for Black and global majority people, were looking to address several important issues that you saw in the film, from kind of HIV to domestic violence to several things. And so they reached out and they wanted a project. And originally, they wanted a kind of a web series. Thank you. And they wanted a web series, and that was the kind of idea that they had. And so I pitched instead, saying if they didn't have to sort of change their budget, if I could... Oh, hello. Oh, hi. If I could... do a feature instead, and that's how it sort of came about.
And how did you both get involved?
We did a short film before this, maybe like a year and a bit before, that was in the film, that was like the bit that was where at the party. I met Joseph at his last film, White Color Black. And then there's a short film project going on, so I got involved with that, and then that, it was the same characters, so it kind of led on.
Basically, I'd done some work with NAS before, and Joseph asked me, and I said yes.
There you go, yes.
We're going to share this. Okay, so Kashif, obviously you're not an actor in this movie, so I need to get your opinion. What do you think
about
this film?
Is this on?
Okay. Yes, it is. So what did you think about, overall?
Yeah, I thought it was really good. It's the first time I've seen it, and I'm a big fan of Joseph's work, so it was good just seeing a film that addresses so many different themes and all little short stories that also connected together. So I think it was really powerful.
Yes, I really enjoyed this movie, the interconnectedness of all of the characters. There was one character specifically, the secretary of... she was like the tie. She's everyone's link with everyone. You see her almost everywhere. She's connected to the students in school. She's connected to the charity. She's, and I just kept seeing her and going, oh, there she is again. So I kind of like seeing her everywhere.
And Michelle Taiwo is an absolutely incredible actor.
Yeah. Cool, cool, cool. So let's go a bit deep now into the themes that you've slightly touched on. And this movie is quite heavy and it excellently, you know, touches on very sensitive and important topics. So let's start with the domestic violence one first. How was that, navigating that story and telling that story, like, for you?
I mean, I think, like you say, these are all very kind of heavy themes, and there was a lot of research that Damien and myself had to do to write the material. But there was also all the information that Naz had, because domestic violence, sadly, is incredibly common, you know, and that's across the board. So although we were looking at sort of people of color, family and situation, but the numbers across the board was just really heavy and terrible. So it wasn't easy. Well, none of them was easy. But I guess the domestic violence one was just particularly difficult, just knowing that there's a lot of people that live and continue to live with that.
Yeah, so would you like to speak a bit about your role and how, because I felt like your character was different. When I was watching, I felt like a lot of African mother-in-laws would have probably taken the son's side and would have tried to protect the son more. And you were more of like, no, you need to protect your wife. You need to be there. And you were there for her. Because if not for your character, like, she could be dead.
So. Well, yes, because she actually called the police. I thought what was good with the piece was the subtlety about the relationship between the mother and the son, where the son had actually seen the domestic violence, but you don't have to perpetuate, you don't have to continue it. It's like with things like incest and paedophilia. Most people who do commit paedophilia have been abused themselves, but most of the people who actually are paedophiles, most people don't go on to do it. Do you know what I mean? It's just of the ones who do go on, they've usually been abused themselves. But most people who've been abused don't go on to abuse. I thought it was interesting that that was the history of his father and mother's relationship. And she was worried about him and wanted him to be a good man. But he, because of, I think, his arrogance and ignorance as well, because there's a line where he says, which is very telling, when he says, look what you made me do, which is something that's quite a common feature in domestic violence cases, where, because there's a lot of work and research that's done into it in terms of it's not an easy relationship. It's not an easy relationship between two people when there's violence, because people also, then there's a part to play on both sides. I'm not saying that you blame one or the other, you know, not blame the person who's being treated poorly or being abused, but there is an element with some of that. So it was just interesting. I thought there was a subtlety there. But yes, the mother acknowledged that and was frightened for the fact that her son may become the man she didn't want him to become, and he probably didn't want to become either.
Yeah, generational trauma, just passing that trauma from one generation to the next. Kashif, do you have anything to say about that sort of relationship between the mother, the son, and his wife?
I thought it was displayed really well. I think it shows and highlights, like what you said, about how abusers are victims of abuse, or they've seen their parent do that as well. So I think it was good to see that the mother was on the daughter-in-law's side, because that's very rare, especially culturally. So I think it was good just to see that, and the support of having women support each other, because sometimes in that situation it can be rare.
But I also think there was fear there. That's why I think they can hear me. You can hear me, can't you? Oh, for the camera, sorry. The fear she had, because she was conflicted, because she knew she had to do the right thing, but at the same time, it was her son. And I'm sure she would be visiting him. Do you know what I mean? Yes, yes, when he was in prison or wherever or whatever happened, she would still be visiting him, trying to hope that he would be a changed man.
So with the theme of abuse, I think is the right segue to Adam's character. And it's funny how the theme is unraveling identity. Perhaps that like the name of the movie Faces almost seems like with every face, like there's a hidden face, like multiple faces. You know, there's that Chinese theme of everyone has three faces, like the one you see, the one you... So I feel like you touched on that. Anyway, going towards Adam's character and abuse, and how was it like playing that character for you?
It wasn't good. It was really interesting, like understanding about kind of the character. And I think because we did the short film before, ages back, understanding that a lot of abuse that's between Luke and Adam, Luke and Gaetan's character is called Adam, is a lot to do with like male ego. It's not really to do with like a sexual attraction or whatever. It's like dominance, which we see in like the animal kingdom. There was like a story that rung true that was a younger, I think it was a 13-year-old boy who stole a phone from a kid around the same age. And then the kid, a week later, didn't have a phone. And the young boy's way of kind of showing dominance was to sexually abuse him. So that was once that kind of made it clear to me that, and everyone can take whatever they want out of the film, but just understanding their dynamic and Adam, which is the other character, had everything that the Luke character kind of wanted, was the popular guy, was even like you see when he's watching him get with the girl, that whether he fancies her or not, there is just this hierarchy, and that was his way, which obviously is not a good way of getting some kind of dominance back. Yeah,
I thought that was, because that comes across really well, the jealousy. And again, that was something historically, sometimes when armies were conquered, they would rape their captors. And this was a way of sort of showing dominance to these men, that saying that we have totally captured you in this way. So I thought that was really, that was another story that was well told, although I was very frustrated that the character didn't get their comeuppance in any kind of way. But, you know,
part two.
It's showing life, isn't it? He didn't get his comeuppance. They got the wife beater, they didn't get the rapist.
That's interesting, because I kept trying to find the motivation behind the character, because I didn't understand what his motivation was. Was he attracted to Adam, or was he just some... I didn't even think of male domination to this.
I thought, well, when you saw the fact that he didn't get into the program to go to Borneo, and then there were other things that were sort of flagged there, but really, when you see he did not get in, and this kind of... this feeling of just, you know, why not me? Who? And it just takes advantage. And I thought it was clearly premeditated, because you see he's come with that bottle at some point. I thought it would, I don't know, maybe it's because I've seen it before. Maybe somebody who's not seen it before might have thought, is he going to give it to one of the girls? Or is he going to, do you know what I mean? But it's because of his jealousy, basically. Yeah. So,
can you touch on a bit of... that character?
Yeah, I mean, I think the really important thing was trying to strike that balance where it wasn't just that people think, oh no, he's attracted to him and therefore he, you know, he does what he does. And I obviously people will read the film in however way they want, and some people have that thought. That wasn't my intention. And I remember that when Adam and I were working on the film, in fact, on the short version, which Fernando Ruiz, the cinematographer, is sitting right there.
Hey, guys.
Of both films, and Giacomo, who was my assistant. So good to see you guys. So the really talking to Adam, and Adam was great because what Adam does is he sort of comes with reams of preparation and question around everything behind his character. And that question around why is he doing it was one that we really had to get underneath. And the key thing was that this was not about someone fancying someone in our minds. This is about someone exacting some kind of price, a terrible toll. Because then when he does it, that moment when he breaks down, you know, I've had people say to me, oh, well, that's his crying and you're trying to somehow justify. It's like, I don't think that's what we're trying to do. I think what's happening is that the unthinkable has happened, that he's done to someone he also deeply cares about. There's also a human side to him that, you know, realizes the extent of the damage that he's done. And I think that's why he breaks down.
Keshif, would you like to touch on?
I agree with everything what everyone said. I personally did think it was more of a male dominance thing rather than sexuality or them being attracted to each other or wanting each other or struggling with who they are. I liked how Joseph kind of, even though you didn't purposely hint at that, you could kind of gauge that because you were trying to figure out while watching it, okay, do they like each other? Is it, you didn't know. But then I think when Luke didn't get in to the same place where they could go, I could tell, you could see the kind of rage in him inside where he really wanted to like be better than Adam. And that's just what it was. And I think it's good that I highlighted that there's a lot of men who do that. Doesn't mean that they're gay or anything. It's just a dominance. It's just a thing to be like, okay, I'm better than you. And it just also shows how much of a narcissist he is. The fact that he was there for him and was trying to be the model best friend. And I think it's good to show that, you know, who needs enemies when you've got friends? You know, keep your enemies closer. That's as the saying goes. So that's what I took away from it. Yeah.
And I mean, just to add quickly, and this was just anecdotal in sort of research and talking to people on X, Y, and Z. But it was, there was a theme that kept coming back. For example, you know, for example, we hear all the time how, say, homophobic people are in, say, parts of the Caribbean or parts of Africa, X, Y, and Z. But I think what Suzette touched on was really important, because we know that in, say, parts of Jamaica, for example, historically, one of the ways in which the colonizers and brutalists, brutal people, exercised power was to take the strongest man in the community and humiliate them by raping them, you know? And so I think all these associations around punishment, power, men lashing out in the ultimate way they can, which is to emasculate in their mind a man to a degree. Yeah, all of that came into play.
It's really interesting, because now I'm thinking of Pulp Fiction. I think that's the one with Bruce Willis in that scene, because I was always confused about that, and this is just...
I mean, with that scene, I think it's dominance, but also they're just freaks. Like, they're perverts. So it's just like, oh, here's an opportunity. Let's just do it. So, yeah, I think it's a bit of both.
A bit of both. I'd like to also touch on the sisterhood with Sindiso. And I like that this movie touched on the importance of sisterhood. And yeah, just anything you'd like to say about that?
Me?
Yeah, anyone.
Because I'm a sister. Well, yeah. Yes. Community, which I thought came across with all like the friendship groups. That was another point. There was also the community centre, but the friendship group, although you got a bad apple in there, but still it is a friendship group where they have this relationship, and that is very important because communities are made up in lots of ways. You know, their families, friends, neighbours, whatever hobbies you have or whatever, those friendship groups are really, really, they're important communities. So yeah, that community feels, yeah, very strong. And important.
But I think it also touched on the importance of like safe sex, you know, the opening scene where she basically tells him to go. And it was a good thing she did, right? Because she could have got HIV. So I think it's important to show the importance of women supporting women and women talking, you know, without her pushing to for her to talk and to come to the woman's center, then who knows what would have happened.
I mean, I thought so. It was very clever as well, considering the roots of the film in many ways was something for a sexual health organisation. And without pushing that to the degree that you couldn't watch it as a film. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't like a public information film where it's like, I'm going to tell you now that you have to, you know. So I thought that was very well done and is part of the good writing on the writers and there were some lovely, really lovely shots in it as well, where it was filmed again, which is wonderful because it saved it from just being, you know, it wasn't a public information film, as I said, where although those are the that's the skeleton of it, because that's where it was coming from initially.
Yeah, the cinematography was beautiful and the way you captured black skin was beautiful. It wasn't like, I'm not gonna say that corporation that don't really do the best with capturing. It was almost like Insecure-esque, like the beauty, the shadows, and yeah, beautiful film. Beautiful film.
Definitely hands up for that. That was great. That was a fabulous picture.
I mean, I remember quite early on in the conversation with Fernando, and he pitched this very bold way to light the film, which is essentially kind of like, we're gonna, you know, lean into sort of single source lighting as our kind of motivation, and we're not going to be afraid of shadows, we're not going to be afraid of contrast. And conversely, what he knew was that I love colour. So it was like, also, how do we incorporate all of those kind of elements? And then finally, I do think that it's very rare to get cinematographers who instinctively understand how to shoot black skin. And that's hats off to Fernando, because I think he does.
I really want to talk about this.
So I know with a lot of filmmaking, when it comes to the end, post-production, there's always a lot of cuts. So were there any things that are not in this movie that you wish that you just had to, because of time, you just had to let it go?
There are quite a few things that are not in the final version. But do I wish that they were there? No, not ultimately. I think the important thing is that, you know, I have a very close working relationship and friendship with my editor, Christopher Chow. And Chris is always of that mindset that less is more, you know. And so we are always kind of going, is this telling the story? Is this needed? Can we be tighter here? So there's quite a few things, actually, that are not in the film. But I think that the film is better for it.
Adam, what would you have liked, like an alternative ending? If there was an alternative ending in your head, what could that be?
For the character.
For the character.
For the character. I won't say I like the ending, but I think what happens to Luke, my character, is just representative of like what happens a lot in, like, you look at the percentages of people who like commit what happened there. And you saw with Adam, the other character, how he took time, like he didn't go straight away, and then that it's a lot less likely to find out kind of what's happened. So I think, yeah, obviously, as kind of Suzette was saying, like, oh, it'd be nice if he went away, but no, I think the way it was great, because that's just, like, I don't like statistically,
yeah,
how it is.
I kept thinking, like, perhaps you touch Adam's shoulder and he'd get like a flashback or something. I kept waiting for that. Like, maybe that would happen, but
flashback. No, yeah, I think he was fully out. Like, I don't think he was. Yeah. Could have knocked out Rhino.
He's lucky he woke up.
Yeah, Kashif, what would you like to say about?
I liked that it ended like that as well. I think if it had a happy ending, it kind of would have been corny. The reason why I say that is because, you know, Luke has to kind of internally deal with what he did for the rest of his life. He has to deal with his own trauma and stuff like that. And like Adam said, like statistically, you know, rape, people don't really go to jail for it. So I think it's important to show the realities of what happens when this takes place.
Most prosecutions just collapse.
Exactly.
Yeah, most of the rape prosecutions collapse.
Let's take it to the audience and see if they have any questions. Do you have any questions?
Hello. I'm Lanray. I really enjoyed the film, actually. The fact that, just to make it lighter, I'll probably go to the fact that I enjoyed the swimming lessons, actually, between the dealt with one of the so-called, I don't know, what happens in the black communities where people don't swim and all that, just taking it lightly. But I would like to know, how was it incorporating Adam's short film into your film? What was the process like?
Okay, so that was a short that I also directed. And it was a story that I had always intended would sit within a larger piece. Right off the bat, you know, the feature was likely to happen, but it wasn't 100% guaranteed that it was going to happen at the time. You know, they'd already said they wanted to do it X, Y, and Z, but with all these things, until it happens, you never know. So one of the key things was that I remember, again, saying to Fernando that the challenge here was that we needed to have a short film that would be able to lift entirely into the feature film, which meant that the lighting and all of those things could sit and work almost a year and a bit later when we shot the feature film. So there were a lot of challenges on that point. And at the same time, you know, challenges for actors like Adam and just kind of go, there's so much that also has to kind of read over that stretch of time, having to remember a performance that happened, you know, so long ago to then calibrate how to move on with it. So it's a lot of those kinds of things, I think, that but I was very clear that I really wanted the story to live. And if I'm honest, I mean, I'm glad that this story exists here, and at the risk of wanting to do the same thing again, I almost wish that this story could have lived in its own bigger universe, because I think there's a lot to unpack there. I think there's a feature film that could happen with that whole thread on its own. It doesn't mean that I'm going to make it, but I think it could.
Yeah, and even going back to the theme for the quest of authenticity, we have to talk about the Oreca goddess, and I can't remember the characters, but that triangle, I think it's a good relationship to have a conversation about. So, what do you think about the whole triangle and the journey of the characters?
I think Kashif to take this first.
Okay.
Yeah,
I thought, again, very relatable. I think there's a lot of black men from Africa and the Caribbean who are in that situation where, you know, they're not out to their family, or there's family pressures, you know, for you to get married, have a kid. Okay, maybe not for me, like, you know, the whole arranged marriage, sure, and all that. But I think it was in a way for me, it was funny because of just the hilarity of the situation and how what was the wife's name again? I can't remember.
Chika.
Yeah, Chika. Yeah. Just how she was very like dominant about what she wanted. And I think it was good that at the end he was able to come out to his mom and stuff like that. But it also shows it's like too little, too late. You know, you've got to kinda be quick with it. Otherwise, you're going to end up alone. So yeah, I enjoyed it.
I think you only came out because it was a virtual conversation. I don't know if you would have done that.
in the same room. Yeah, because I mean, I wonder if to a Nigerian parent, if you're ever too big for a cane. I wonder, even when they're 90 and can barely move, you know, the instinct is there. that relationship triangle, I think, Kashif, you're right. It is so sadly quite common, you know, and I felt the most sorry actually for Gaspar, because he's the one who really didn't know properly that anything was amiss, right? Here he is.
Chika did either.
True. Okay, that's a good point.
I feel like she knew. I feel like she knew. Nah, she knew. She knew. Think about it. And then she's like,
I'm going to defer to the sister.
She wanted the house. Okay. That was a nice house.
Okay. I agree that I don't think maybe she knew, but she had an ulterior motive. There was a status thing. You know, there was a status thing.
To be a housewife.
Marry a pauper. Look at the girl. You know what I mean? She's putting herself together.
True, exactly. And that's it. This is the coming together of like old money and old money, in a way. So, yes, she didn't know, but then very quickly she did. But if you think about it, like, she was still going to go ahead with it. Even after she found out.
Yes.
Yeah, but that's so real.
That's a real thing, right? That happens. Yeah. Wait, let me bring it.
Sorry, my name is Guy. And so for me, the thing about this whole movie was about exploring power. If you look at all of the relationships, there was a power dynamics at the beginning that sort of shifted. I think the only power dynamic that didn't really change was the mother to the son, actually. But so I just really wanted to thank you very much for that, because I thought it was really well done, to some points where I kind of like had a really significant reaction to it. So just thank you for that.
Amazing. So guys, we're out of time. And this is the end, and at this end bit, we do like a voting thing. Obviously, you have to vote. If you like the movie, it's green. You don't, it's red. Oh, yeah, okay, we all got one. So, so guys, let's all pretend Joseph is not here, even though we love the film. Yeah. So, can you all please vote or share how much you like the film in your paddles? Yeah? Joseph, come on.
Lots of green.
Yeah. Amazing. Thank you so much, guys. It was a great film. So thank you. This is the Real Happy Hour podcast. Thank you very much to the panelists. My name is Ola. Thank you, Suzette. Thank you, Kashif. Thank you, Adam. And thank you, Joseph. Really, really appreciate your time.
Thank you, guys, for coming.
Now this is the best bit. We go upstairs, and we've got like a whole sitting area, and we get to talk, and you can... Yeah, so let's go upstairs. Thank you, guys.
The challenge, as well as the usual kind of creative challenges of writing a screenplay, obviously, there was also a set of information and rules that we had to adhere to, given the fact that this was a film that was being funded through a kind of sexual health organization. All that information needed to be incredibly accurate. At the same time, there was a lot of information that they wanted to give. So it was around how do we, as creatives, make that not feel like, I said earlier, like I'm giving information around your sexual health. So that was a bit of a challenge to navigate the two things. And as the writing went on, I began to get quite firm to the moment where certain of those things would begin to get in the way of the narrative. And I was able to push back as much as I could to the funders and kind of go, is there a way that this can be slightly different? And they would then sort of send it all off, the notes off to like, because they had a medical panel of several people. And they would sort of all come back with their different expertise and go, well, okay, maybe this could happen, but this is definitely not going to happen. Hey. So we faced some of those. Yeah, there were lots of definitely this is not going to happen because of how the reality is when you're dealing with
those situations in the front.
Yeah. Kashif is, outside of being a writer, producer, is also a podcaster and does really great reviews. Any questions you have for him? Anything at all? His social media is amazing, like, he's got a great thing.
Well, can I have a question? So, what can you give an example of the kind of thing that they did not like? Because I'm thinking, like, that's quite constraining creatively, it might be.
Yeah, but I mean, it's yes and no, because the project came about from a very specific place, right? Okay. Which is, we've got to get this
information
and intervention to a degree out to people, right? And at the end of the day, it's also people have got to feel empowered to want to do something about the situations that they find themselves in, you know? So it was also making sure, therefore, that we weren't doing things that ultimately would turn people away and be detrimental. And so...
I was just talking about like my experience with stuff like that, and I've noticed kissing scenes, sex scenes, you know,
stuff like that. I'll give you a possible example. They never challenged me as to how graphic I wanted to be with the sexual stuff, right? I never had to turn that down. So the funny thing is, I did turn it down slightly in the feature, because if you see the short 46, that rape goes on for much longer, and it's more like held, you know? So it's like twice as long in the short film. But I decided to cut that in the feature. Because once in the short film, it worked really well, just to kind of be in this grotesque moment and as an audience in the short film. But in the feature film, it didn't do the same thing. It just felt gratuitous to a degree. And what was important was, like, where do we sit now with him emotionally in this versus in the short, where he was doing something slightly different? So, yeah, positively, they allowed me to do those kinds of things. It was really around the medical information. So, for example, the blood taken sequence, for example, when he goes to get tested and all that stuff, I wanted to do that quite differently. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, this is how it would happen. Okay. If you are a victim of X, Y, and Z in the UK, this is the process. There's no deviation from it. It's going to be this, this, and this. Because I was just like, you know, having a doctor sit there, and I'm going to now do this, and I'm not going to do that. And it's like, it's not interesting. It's like, well, that's how it would happen.
Yeah, okay.
You know, those kinds of things.
And what
sorry, can I just ask, you know, the end, the scene at the end with Luke and the coach, and that was that
police card.
So was that the police officer that was questioning Adam? That was getting all that?
Yes, that card.
So was that a fake card, or was that like a genuine actual?
Oh no, that was a fake card. So that was a card that our Marco, our production designer.
No, that character was. You hire that character.
Oh no!
To just pretend.
Oh no!
No.
Why you can't write it? Take it to the police. Maybe it's all fake. No, you are somewhere else.
Yes, I have a question, because I know that when it comes to like intimate scenes, there's usually like trainers behind it in terms of like to keep the actors from feeling safe. So when it comes to like cases of filming like sexual assault, is that the same training that is like there in terms of there's only a few people in the room, not like?
There wasn't an intimacy coordinator, was
there? No, this is before intimacy coordinators became a thing, yeah. So there was none of that. But, yeah, super neat. it was a close set. So when we shot that particular sequence, I believe it was me and Fernando in the room and the two actors. Even the sound person was outside. So we rigged the mics and then we were out. So it was just two of us in the room with them. And then in the process,
of working with them around getting to that point, there was a lot of intimate, well, can't find a better word, but that was really done between myself and Adam and Gitan to get them to be incredibly comfortable with each other, but also allow them to find with themselves how they wanted to play, where they, how far they were willing to kind of go with it. They're both incredibly brave actors, I will say that, you know, and so they were not daunted at all, you know, like, in fact, for Adam, the physical thing wasn't even an issue for Adam. It was the emotional thing. It was like trying to, you know, it's like, where am I at? I didn't want to speak for you. You can take it from there. But
it's like with how comfortable Gitan is, character.
You fell asleep. In the actual scene.
On, yeah. So
it was so late. We shot that scene like at 1 a.m. Yeah. You know.
But a lot of the shot is like up from from here, and it's not to take it away, but like Gitan's not there again.
No, but you're forgetting one thing, because it's not in the feature, but in the short, there's the shot in the mirror, which is held, which is completely fully you naked at that point. And that was like, even from the side in the mirror. But but I think again, it took, it was getting those two people to really be comfortable with each other and the parameters and the what were they prepared to do and not to do. And that took a bit of work, but it was really that kind of like, where is he in his mental space? And that was really for Luke. Because yeah, like Gitan was just like, okay, cool, it's happening, and you know, for him it was more around how he was gonna play the bemusement of not knowing and realizing what's actually happening.
Yeah, things like easy, because it's not actual intimacy.
Yeah.
Like if you were to do like,
I love
rape scene, exactly. Or even with someone struggling or something like that, it's not, it's actually passed out. So like, I would say it's more about, it's just more like understanding the bathroom scene was like probably bigger in a weird way. So
I think it was like just really good to bring awareness to like male victims that like sexually assaulted, because I think like the focus obviously was about dominance. But I think that topic's always kind of a grey area, that's what I've spoken about. So I think it's really good spotlighted that in the film.
And I hope, because this was released in 2018, and this is 2024, man. We're giving you a flower. And then this is the struggle of being like, a filmmaker. Yeah, it was made a minute ago.
Well, it's so cold.
But nonetheless, exactly. Like, it still touches on today's issues and with celebrating, like that's the whole point. This podcast, this whole community, is about highlighting independent cinema, filmmakers, and celebrating, doing the black, you know, because we don't have a lot of spaces that touch on that. So thank you very much for your time. Thank you all very much. What do you have going on next? What's going on? And how can we follow you? What's happening?
I'm in something that's coming up. It's an adaptation of Bernardino Evaristo's Mr. Lover Man. That's going to be coming out early autumn, and that'll be on BBC. That's, I've just finished the play, Kill, and I'm looking for work. BBC, I think they're going to make it sort of like, I think they're going to push it quite well. It's got Lenny James in it, Sharon Dean Clarke, and as I said, it's an adaptation of one of Bernardine's, Aristo's early novels, Mr. Loverman.
It was her Booker winner, actually.
What's the Booker? That was Girl, Woman, Other.
Okay.
Mr. Loverman is an earlier, novels, which is really
It's a good story, man. I know about it.
I think
don't give any away, but I know what it's about. So it's going to be very groundbreaking, I feel like.
Yeah,
we're going to have a lot of conversation.
We'll
be doing more like production wise, like producing, and then writing something with Joseph.
I'm currently developing something in Brazil, and so we'll see how that goes. It's been now 2.5 years since we've been actively doing that. We're back to Brazil later this year, and we'll see how it goes.
If anything, just I'm attached to a few proof of concept short films which are going to be features, developing a couple of features. So yes, yeah, exciting time.
We don't have enough time to pitch, but what I will do is follow up with the boss of Monday. I was ready to pitch with you. So I'll follow up with you and yeah, keep you in the loop. So thank you all very much. That's a wrap, guys.
Hello. Why is this pitch?
Well, do you have time? Because I was worried about
it. I don't have to go, but I just wonder, I'm just curious.
I'm excited.
Who's
the
pitch?
This job.
No.
And we will do what we just did.
Okay, what feature or show?
Anything.
Oh, so we have the film already.
It's an event. You've got a jump film. Talk about it. Let's go.
Oh, okay. Basically, it's a show. I want it to be a web series. It's a project called Curious. It follows the life of Curious. It follows the life of a black gay rapper. Black guy who lives in South London. He's not like queer presenting, but he is queer. He has a goal or dream to be a rapper, but obviously he's gay, so he's not sure how he's gonna go down that path. But then on a link one time, he goes on Grindr, as all the gays do, you know, who are DL. He met somebody, and the fact he found their notepad raps, and then they start rapping together and sharing moments. So the other character, he's actually part of a queer music collective. So, and then, you know, he's more like out there, he's more confident. So he introduces the rapper character to his queer music friends. And then they begin a journey to make like queer music, or what that's going to look like. But it's all set like in the backdrop of Brixton, which is where I grew up. And it's about like how black young men navigate. What queer black men navigate their sexuality in places where it's hostile, like an escape, or in the black community. That's what it's about. I want to make a show.
You have a video.
I have it as a short film, which is a pilot.
So we'll show it here, maybe.
So it's a pilot.
Well
done, man, for getting it. Oh, and I also have an audio series. I produce audio plays or projects as well.
Amazing. Awesome, man. Yeah, follow up.